Oh, I think this will end up being a personal recording. Things I'm talking about are not going to be really, well, for public consumption. Not that I hide it all that much, but anyway, I'll be honest. Over the years, I've kept kind of mental files about what I would do, how I would behave in certain notable church callings, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, of which I am a member. Bishop file, actually it's a branch president file, but now I'm not in a branch anymore, so it's a bishop file. Stake president file, and you see what other bishops do, how they behave and how they are, and you go, well, I want to do that, or I don't want to do that. Now, mine is heavily tempered by my reading. Now, I had been a clerk for years and years and years and years, and years. So I had exposure to the handbooks of instruction. There used to be two of them, one specifically for stake presidents, bishops, and the other one that was more general for other leadership callings. They even used to chop it up into little pieces so you could have the individual little piece that pertained most to you, and they wouldn't have to give you the whole enchilada, which usually went to, oh, counselors in the bishopric, the high priest group leader, the elders quorum president, and clerks. Clerks kept one, not really so much to be read, but to just to store. Back then, now that it's all gone down the drain in favor of an electronic version that really kind of puts everything together, and everybody gets to see pretty much everything. And well, I think it probably still is. You have to have a leadership calling in the church. Now, it doesn't have to be so big. A counselor in the primary can read the whole of the handbook of instructions. And it's a good thing. There's a lot of good things in it. Lots of things have changed over time. Every organization and every leader falls horribly short. Because so many of us, and I don't exempt myself from this at all, use that mental folder. If I ever get to be this is the way I'm going to do things. If I ever get this calling, that's how I'm going to do that. And instead of actually going and reading the manual to know what the church policies are, to know what you should be doing, and how it should be done. Anyhow, yeah, I was getting worked over by there are probably several kinds, but I can think of two right now. There are the people that ignore or don't follow policy and do what they would prefer doing, which makes everybody else a little nuts. At least it makes me nuts. In that it's like, if you're not going to keep policy, if that's not interesting to you, I don't know what we're doing. I don't know, I just don't know. I'm confused by what steers you. Because it's not the handbook of instructions. Oh, I'm being steered by the Spirit. You go, but there's a handbook of instructions. You don't need to be steered by the Spirit on this. There's policy and procedure. Anyway, and then there are those who expand upon these things. And I, every once in a while, I'll hit up on an expansion. Somebody trying to kind of tell me in kind of an oblique way. I'm the Sunday school president. In the actual manual, it says you call a Sunday school president. And if you feel some kind of strange need, you can have a secretary, which wouldn't be a bad idea because I spend less time actually keeping good attendance records than I should. I probably should call a secretary, and that would be their about their only job is to do the role, make sure it gets done. In fact, I don't even know if the policy manual even mentions counselors for Sunday school presidents, but they tend to call them anyway in bigger wards because they always have, and because they don't really read the manual. But anyway, they'll come and give me some kind of stuff. I tend to read the manual more than others, but then I find out that other people are reading the manuals, but they're reading it to their own interpretation, and they throw in there some extra stuff. Oh, you know, in my old ward in Mesa, Arizona, we used to do this, and the whole thing was, the only reason to say those things was to say that they did it better there and that you should do it that way too. And it's like, number one, I don't have to do anything beyond what the policy book says. In fact, I probably should manufacture things, give new responsibilities, situations like that. Anyway, but regardless, so as I was saying, I have a bishop folder, which I really haven't got anymore because I'm sorry. I think I've finally come to the realization that I will never be that sort of leader. And it's probably autism. And that's understandable. I'm not very nice. Like I said in a previous recording, not one of these personal ones. Nice is not a virtue for me. Do I need to get better about saying what needs to be said? Yes. I let too many things go, but I was sitting today I was sitting in Sunday school, and somebody started kind of leaning into, I already talked about another recording. It was a good example of it, though, where I really needed to just say something. But it's like, you know what, Nemro, all you ever do is straighten people out, and they're not really willing to be straightened out. They really believe that this is the way the Lord works, that Jesus Christ gives out participation awards. If you feel bad, he's going to give you something to make you feel better. And it's like, no, if you fail, you fail. You know, and he might help you get up. You can do that. Or he might not. Really kind of up to him. He's done the work to get you to both salvation and exaltation. The vast majority of what's left, you need to do to qualify for those things. The requirements aren't very hard. Keeping the commandments isn't very difficult at all. Christ even said so. Take my burden upon you. It's light. It's much lighter than the burden that you carry with yourself. just reading one. Lisa and I were just listening to one of the faith, I forget what it's called. It's called Hope Floats. That's a movie. Faith Matters talks. It's kind of like Mormon TED Talks. And this one was by the cellist from the Piano Guys. And it was really good. He did a great job. And one of his points was he gave what he calls the parable of the dishwasher. He was used to the old-timey dishwashers. I thought it was funny because Lisa and I, even when we have dishwashers, we don't use them because they don't do a good enough job for our satisfaction. So we just wash our own dishes, probably to the ultimate chagrin of all of our children, who it's like, oh, we've had this. Dad, half time, even disconnects it. It goes through the pain of having to reconnect it when we move so that it can be rendered workable, even though he never used it. I would turn it off so that it wouldn't just by accident get a little water and get really, you know, weird tasting or smelling, all that stuff. Anyway, the parable of the dishwasher. This fella grew up that you pretty much had to wash the plate and then you put it in the washing machine and the washing machine would simply just rewash the plate for you. You know, because it had too many times where you'd put something in there in that washing machine and it would not be clean when it was done. So you got into the habit of just basically making the dish clean and then putting it in there to give it another couple of hours of getting water sprayed on it and detergent, whatever else. And there had been a remodel of his house. And since he was the guy that washed a lot of the dishes, he took it upon himself to get the new dishwasher, and he got the new fancy one, and he did it all up, and he said, wait a minute, and he put a load in, did what he normally does, basically wash all the dishes until they were clean, and then put them in the washer for, I don't know, some kind of sanitized thing, and so he turned it on, and it wouldn't run, and he was upset, because he said, we just bought this, so brought up the repairman, kind of saw what was going on, and he said, the modern dishwashers have sensors. And when it sees that the dishes are clean, it just doesn't even turn on. And it's like, oh. And then he compared it to Jesus Christ. And about what Jesus' job is. And he said, you know what? He said, I spend so much time and effort and his talk was about burnout, spiritual burnout. It says spend so much time and effort and burn out trying to do everything that Jesus does, thinking that that's what Jesus wants you to do. And then they come back and so it's like that dishwasher. You have to, don't try to spend all your effort and time cleaning yourself up, doing all the work yourself. Let Jesus do his work. Don't do it for him. It's what he does. And it was like, well, that's pretty good. I said, how good am I with that? It's like, I don't know. Said it would go far enough to us getting lazy, us getting rather complacent. And I am the absolute worst person to say such things. I am the laziest workaholic there's ever been, as far as I'm aware of. There's people who are who may be more lazy than I am, but they're not workaholics. And there's people who may work harder or longer or more consistently than I do, but most of them aren't lazy. But I'm both. I know, it says, oh, it doesn't make that an oxymoron. You go, nah, no. It says, I spend a lot of time spinning my wheels. And, you know, and I think there's some virtue to doing that. Maybe, and perhaps I'm wrong. But I think one of the most important things, and do I need to work on it a lot more? Yeah, I need to do a lot better. Is that I with being this way, I'm really complacent. I don't do a lot of what I should be doing, although I'm doing a lot of just junk. And that's, what do I do about that? So these recordings, you know, I've never talked much about these recordings. These recordings I basically do in case I get famous. Like I said, I have made up a bishop folder. Sometimes I get rather frustrated with the local leadership that I'm with. They're not doing it the way I would do it. And that's problematic, right? They can do it however they like. And what business do I have even having thoughts about it? Ain't my job. Tell it's my job, shouldn't even give it a thought. Somebody else's job, and you know, it's their job. Don't get weird about how somebody does their job. Anyway, the bishop or the branch president file. I also have a presiding bishop file. As a direct descendant of Aaron, I could be called upon to be the presiding bishop of the church. And I have to say that on a very large level, I'm really quite confused about the role of the presiding bishop, what it's supposed to do, and how it's being conducted in the modern church. The scriptures that talk about it must have been significantly ignored, or significant parts of it must have been ignored. What Christ says in the scriptures that is supposed to be what a bishop does isn't done, neither by the presiding bishop nor by the congregational bishops or the presiding bishop. I've always equated it with the fact that it seems like upper leadership is not interested in fulfilling the scriptural mandate of who should be a presiding bishop. I don't know if they're just putting it off. I have no idea. Of course, you know, they're not sharing it with somebody the likes of me. It's not my place. Although it's like, hey, I come from a family that qualifies for this. At least that's what the tradition says. And I'll present the tradition to you if you want. Right now, the senior member of my family is my father. And you go and there should be some consideration as to whether he should be the presiding bishop of the church. You know, says now I am his second son. I am not in line. If there's some kind of way that this gets done, I'm not in line unless you have all kinds of fun from Genesis, from the first book of the Bible, where the birthright son often is not chosen to receive the birthright, you know, that it doesn't flow through them for one reason or another. Usually due to disobedience. I don't want to be accused by the Lord ever of evil speaking of the Lord's anointed. I've been trying really hard, in spite of what I see and how I feel, not to write the ark. It's not my place. Like I said, if the local bishop starts doing things and it makes you nuts and you go, what on earth is he doing and under what auspice does he do it? It's not my ark to steady. Even though in the Old Testament, that was exactly the job of Aaronic priests, was to bear the ark. Isn't that a funny thing? I shouldn't have anything to do with it. But yet on some level I should. It's almost a responsibility, but it's like I don't do that. The fact that the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has high priests serving as bishops is by the scriptural account that allows it to happen, should only be done in the absence of a literal descendant of Aaron. I don't know if there are any literal descendants of Aaron. By tradition, the men in my father's family are literal descendants of Aaron. Regardless, you know. So, do I have a high priest? Do I have a presiding bishop file? Yes. How I would conduct myself. It's pretty skimpy and thin, and I think I'm ready to throw it all out in favor of a better counsel from above. I kind of figure because I think this way and I talk this way, that it's an automatic disqualifier for the Lord. It's never going to come to you. So I don't know. I don't know what to do. I often toyed with saying, you know what? I said, this whole thing about having little young men fill the roles of the Aaronic priesthood does not seem like what the Lord had in mind. It didn't seem to be the kind of thing that the Lord wanted to have done. Traditionally, or at least in Joseph Smith's time, these positions were held by men, full-grown men. And I think 100 years into the church's existence, that was still so. Younger men may be called to priesthood offices, but there was nothing to say, well, 12 and 13-year-olds are deacons, and 14 and 15-year-olds are teachers, and 16 and 17-year-olds are priests. And the day you turn 18, your proud father puts his hands on your head and gives you the Melchizedek priesthood and ordains you an elder. I came from, you didn't get made an elder until you were about ready to go on your mission. You'd get made an elder. You'd go off to the temple. This is how it worked for me out in the sticks, out in the mission field. And that's what did it. If you didn't go on a mission, what on earth purpose were you having getting set apart as an elder? Well, you know, when my two youngest sons went into the military, we went ahead and ordained them elders. Even though one has since kind of apostatized from the church. No. He's just wandered away from the church. The other one ultimately went on a mission after he served in the military. It's old Sam. And Caleb is the one that's like, I don't really know if there's a God or not. It's like, okay. There's no point getting on to him. But I do, you know, I'll say, hey. I said, you know what? If you want to find a good woman to marry, it says, it would behoove you to go to church. For somebody who has standards that are compatible, at least with the standards you used to try and abide, you need to get better about that, man. So I am. This is, am I a little jerky about that? Yeah. Does it maybe tick my kids off? Probably. And you go, well, then you shouldn't do that. And you go, dude, it's my responsibility to do that. And I need to do a better job, I guess, in things like Sunday school to say, you know what? I think you need to go by what it says in Scripture instead of twisting things to make them fit your view of what you think Jesus should be like. Better to learn from Jesus how Jesus behaves. Because I think when it comes down to it, you will turn away from the Savior. You will deny him because he doesn't fit your mold of what Jesus should do. It's like, don't get caught in that trap. Don't even. It's no good. Anyway, so. And I get on this about everything and about all stuff like that. I've tried to make it more publicly accessible. The family's, for lack of a better term, claim to literal descendant of Aaron status. It's totally up to church leadership to figure it out. Do something about it if that's what they're going to do, or ignore it. It's completely up to them. All I'm doing is making it so that if they stumble upon my stuff and they go, well, who's this idiot? They'll say, oh, he's one of those sorts. And I've always said that if this were to come to me or to a member of my family, it would completely be an act of God. Absolutely. My dad and his brothers all have far better experience in business, which is primarily what the presiding bishopric in modern times has been set to doing, running the business of the church. Not a bad thing. If it came to me, I would have to pretty much get other people to handle the business aspects of it, and I would do something else. I have no idea. I guess on some level, it may not really even matter. Except that it's like, if the Lord tells you to do something, you go out and you try to do it. You work it. You, yeah. The Lord tells you to do something, you work it. So, I think I have anything else really to say on this subject. That's all there is. Like I said, these recordings here, they go into my personal folder. Are they accessible on the internet? They are. Are they straightforward to get to? Not really. I don't put links to them, and I don't really think that there are a lot of... I don't think Google indexes it the right way, and I don't change the name of it. The name of it is basically the timestamp. And so you wouldn't know from one to the next what you would do. Of course, you can listen to all of them. I feel for the poor person that has to because they're saying, I'm going to do a comprehensive biography of Jason Nemro, you know, because I've become something or it's interesting, or they hope to find something interesting. All of the just thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of recordings I have. And if it'll still provide something of an accurate picture of what's going on, it's hard to say. Anyway, I'm on my way to Amarillo right now. I've decided to go ahead and try to find me something of an apartment to live in. Spend that money, get it done. As soon as I get that done, I'm going to get rid of the boat, finally just kind of let the boat go. I don't know. I might try to sell it. I've been kind of wondering how much money I want to offer for it. I might offer $1,000 or best offer. It'd be really great to get $1,000 for it. I know on the open market it's worth $5,000 in good shape. That's my question, is I'm not really sure if it's really in good shape. I don't have a clue. I've never raised the mast on it. I've never checked on anything. I just took the word of it from the guy I bought it from. It's never touched water since I've possessed it, which has been about 3 years. So, I think I might let it go for $1,000. Or I will let it go for $1,000. I'm totally prepared to let it go for nothing, because it just needs to go away. Because I'm trying to save $300 of parking it. And I need somebody just to come hook up their truck to it and take it out of there. And it to be gone. I don't know. I don't remember when it needs to be on that. My title to it and all that, all the payments, the taxes I need to pay are due this coming month. So it's a really good time to get rid of it from that standpoint too. It served me well for 3 years. Did a fine job. Don't really need it anymore once I get myself a proper apartment. Move my stuff into it. Seal up that boat. And that's it. Get rid of it. Well, I'm almost out of gas. The big question is, can it wait until tomorrow morning? I'll go get some gas before I head off to work. Awfully good question, isn't it? Anyway, so, okay. I think this is enough recording, so talk to you later. Bye.